Okay, then let's start. Are there any news concerning letters of intent and supporters? Actually, I admit I have no news. Anyone else? Yeah, if not, then let's start with the slides. So we will continue with slide 32. Maybe we should quickly have a look at slide 18 first, because there is the overview of DOT, where you have modular and heterogeneous OSMs. By the way, Terry asked what OSM is, right?
Yes, I did, and I see you've got it in there now. Thank you.
Yeah, it was basically always there. But maybe too early on slide 3. OSM is explained, namely formal models, formal specifications, and formal ontologies, formal specifications, and formal models will henceforth be abbreviated as OSMs. So that's on slide 3. So that's basically what an OSM is. It's basically a logical theory, if you wish, but used in the specific context of ontology, specification, or modeling. So on slide 18, we have these modular and heterogeneous OSMs, so basic OSMs, which are flattenable. Actually, I've added what Terry correctly said, that flattenable means it can be flattened to be a basic OSM. References to named OSMs, extensions, unions, translations, reductions, approximations, and so on. So all kinds of OSMs. But that was the topic of two weeks ago. And based on these OSMs, we now come to, hi, Michael. He's at least in the chat now. Based on the definition of these modular and heterogeneous OSMs, today we will speak about OSM declarations and relations, namely definitions, interpretations, equivalences, modules, modular relations, and alignments. Michael, are you there? Not yet. It should be noted that these OSM declarations and relations are the elements of all ontology libraries, so that you have a library of several ontologies and relations between them. We previously used to call these distributed ontologies, these DOL libraries, but that's a kind of confusing, because already the modular and heterogeneous OSMs themselves can be distributed over the internet. Even an OWL ontology can be distributed, imported other ontologies at completely different URLs. So ontology library or DOL library will be the more precise term. And forgive me if I at times still use the old terminology on the slides. Okay, so then back from slide 18 to slide 32 again. So Michael is still on there.
Hey, Joe, I'm here.
Ah, great.
Sorry, mate.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. I just saw you on the chat and wondered whether you're in the Skype call as well. So welcome. So I've just briefly recalled page 18, OSMs, so ontology, specifications, and models. And now we come to declarations and relations between OSMs, which together form DOL libraries. So slide 33, we can just define an IRI to denote some OSM, so that's written OSM, so O can be ontology or spec or model, this OSM, and then the IRI, and then equal signs, and then O itself is an OSM, for example, a basic OSM written in some language or a more complex one. And that assigns this IRI to the ontology O. It's the same as in Common Logic, you have CL text, and then some name, and then you have the ontology. So here's an example of a pizza ontology, where you define this ontology to have a certain IRI. This IRI is in turn abbreviated with the prefixing mechanism here.
So,
okay. I didn't understand that. There was an echo.
No. Oliver is not able to mute. Doll distinguishes between the ontologies, the specs, and models. So if I would want to specify a model, I would not use the keyword ontology, but model there.
Yes, and a specification with spec. Although logically it's all the same, but from the pragmatics it might be different.
Okay.
Yeah, but right, I should be more explicit here. These keywords are really listed. But that's more a pragmatic thing. So, for example, at OntoHub, the users would like to have ontologies only. And if we populated OntoHub with a lot of UML models, especially if they're not just class diagrams, but say state machines, then the ontology people would be a bit confused, and then it's better to use Model Hub and not OntoHub. And therefore, you can also use the model keyword instead of the ontology keyword. Slide 34. Interpretations of theories, or of OSMs, I should say, more precisely, are written keyword interpretation, then some identifier, which typically is an IRI, column, and then source ontology to target ontology equals a symbol map. So this sigma is a signature morphism, or just mapping some symbols to symbols, or it can also be a logic translation. And in case that both ontologies are flattenable, expresses that the translated ontology sigma of O1 logically is implied by O2. If you have elusive ontologies, you could say equivalently or only, you could say each model of O2 when reduced along sigma is a model of O1. For flattenable ontologies is the same. So that well known from mathematical logic, this notion, and it can be used to relate different theories, and can also be used to reuse theories. So, for example, one easy interpretation in the example there is I from total order to natural number, mapping the elements of total order to natural numbers. And this expresses that the natural numbers with the standard ordering defined on them form a total order. And the reuse is in the fact that if we prove a theorem on total orders, then we can transport this theorem along this interpretation also to the natural number. So we don't need to reprove the theorems, the theorem for natural numbers, but we just can import it from the theorem base of total order. Another interpretation example is from Colore. It's called Geometry of Time. And there is a theory of linear ordered time interval, which is interpreted as ordered points in a special geometry. And I think Colore has a number of interpretations like that. Okay, and the general idea is that the target theory logically implies the source theory, so O2 implies O1, so O1 is, in a sense, the weaker theory and O2 the stronger theory. So it's kind of an ordering among theories, if you wish, but of course mediated through this symbol map. Okay, and equivalence in this ordering is covered on the next slide, 35. You can also say that two ontologies are equivalent, written O1 equivalent sign O2 equal O3. And the equivalence is then postulated between O1 and O2. And O3 is an auxiliary fragment that, if it's added to either O1 or O2, it's a definitional extension. Michael has a question?
I was just reading up some papers recently. There's a really good paper by David Peirce, 2010, that talks about how this is a difference between actually equivalence in this ordering versus what's called logical synonymy. And so synonymy has this property of your third bullet that the two ontologies there's a bijective correspondence between their models. So that's synonymy. But there's an extra condition, besides being mutually interpretable. So there's actually five different relations. There's, mutually interpretable, mutually faithfully interpretable, and then the strongest one being synonymy. O1 and O2 have a common definitional extension, is the definition of logical synonymy. So it's a little bit different than equivalence in the ordering of mutual faithful interpretation, etc. I can post a link to that paper. Right, I can just post that paper.
Oh yes, that's interesting. I didn't know that paper.
Yeah, and I can also send a little PDF I did of a summary of all these different relationships and how they're related to each other. But, essentially I think what you want to say here is this notion of logical synonymy.
Yeah, but do you think we also provide the other notions? So that would be interesting.
Yeah, that's a possibility for sure. Yeah. And actually, we need to clarify this within some of the work that we've been doing in Toronto, that we had been using the notion of mutual faithful interpretation, in other words, treating this as an equivalence, and when in fact we really needed to have synonymy because the theorems we were proving required the bijective correspondence on the models.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So that means that the synonymy is kind of the right notion here.
Exactly.
Yeah, and this mutual interpretability seems to be too weak.
Well, it's too weak to do some of the theorems that we wanted to prove, right, the representation theorems. But it's often strong enough to do other things. You know, like, so mutual, interpretation preserves theorems. Faithful interpretation preserves theorems and satisfiability. But that's still, just because you're preserving theorems and satisfiability is not enough to say that you have a bijection on the set of models.
But it would be interesting to learn more about the contexts which require all the stronger or only the weaker properties. And we could decide whether we want to have actually all these five different notions, which of course would be a potential source of confusion on top IOP users. But on the other hand, if we have just one equivalence, it could be too inexpressive to cover what users really need.
So I actually contacted David Peirce to get to talk about the paper, and he's at the University of Madrid, and I mentioned Onto IOP to him, and so he had expressed some interest, but I that was like around Christmas time, so I'll have to ping him again. And his group, he said that his group actually was sponsored WOMO, WOMO a couple of years ago when it was in Barcelona or something.
Uh-huh.
So he hadn't heard of Onto IOP, but I gave him pointers. So hopefully he'll join the group because he's done a lot of interesting work along these lines.
He was the boss of Dirk Walter when he was in postdoc in Madrid, like till last year. And he was co-organizer of WOMO, the last one.
Oh, perfect then. Yeah, so we should get him a little more involved in Onto IOP.
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Can you capture the name onto the chat, please?
Yeah, I'll put the contact info and everything.
So Dirk also asked recently about the recent drafts for onto IOP, and he's not interested. And there were a couple of people interested in the technical side of this development. So, yes.
Yes,
I mean, this is in our hyper paper. We did distinguish some definitions, and at that time, I mean, 2-3 years ago, I did Google around a bit, and if you look at equivalence of theories, this is actually a quite complex topic. And I think we were just using one definition, but it was clear that we could distinguish several versions, and it's not entirely obvious what is the right version we need in ontology, what kind of synonymy, what kind of equivalence. I think this is a really interesting topic to look in detail at. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put together like a little bibliography that I've been putting together. Yeah, you're right, Oliver. There's quite a spectrum of all these different relationships.
Okay, so Michael, you will pull a paper or post the link to the chat? Or?
Yes, I will.
Yeah, great. So to provide an example of equivalences, there's the well-known equivalences of Boolean algebras with Boolean rings. Boolean rings are just rings that have some additional axiom. And then the axioms that I have given there just define, the first three axioms define the Boolean algebra operations in terms of Boolean ring operations. And the last two axioms define the Boolean ring operations in terms of Boolean algebra operations. And with this, we get that this is both a definitional extension of Boolean algebras and Boolean rings. And then shows that they're in bijective correspondence. And the bijection in this case is easily obtained from these definitions here. Of course, in other cases, it might be more implicit. Okay, slide 36. Module relations. So this is related to module extraction on slide 27. If you go back there to slide 27. You can recall that we have an operation that takes an ontology O and extracts a module with method M and subsignature sigma and some conservativity C. And this extracted module should have the property that the ontology O, so the whole ontology, needs to be a conservative extension. And if we go to slide 36 again, then here we now see that we can also declare a module relation between ontologies O1 and O2, declaring that O1 is a module of O2 with restriction signatures sigma and conservativity C, which can be either model conservativity or consequence conservativity. That's the same as for conservative extension. And the crucial property now is that this relation shall hold for any module O1 extracted from O2 using the extract construct. But we could also take other ontologies and state that there are a module of a given ontology, which then of course needs to be proved. Okay, then slide 37, alignments. So here we follow closely the alignment API. There's a link there. This is maintained by Jérôme Usina and others. He also has written a book, Ontology Matching, where you can find a lot of things about alignments. And alignment, an alignment again begins with an identifier, or I think this should be an IRI, strictly speaking. Then two cardinalities, which basically can be used to specify that the alignment is injective or surjective or bijective and things like that. So for example, the one there would mean it's injective, but since alignments are not necessarily functions but can be general relations, that's kind of symmetric here, so it can be kind of left injective or right injective. Therefore you have two of these cardinality things there. Then you have again the source and target ontologies, O1 and O2. And then you have a set of correspondences, C1 to CN. So these are together forming the alignment. Note that, for example, in BioPortal, only these individual correspondences are collected. They are called mappings there. And you can basically, you do consider these correspondences or mappings in BioPortal in isolation. So it's just a pair of symbols and relating two specific terms in two different ontologies. And here these alignments are more kind of holistic because they are obtained using a set of correspondences, and usually this should be kind of exhaustive and cover all possible useful relations between the ontologies. So these correspondences CI are of form symbol 1 from the ontology 101, rel conf symbol 2 from ontology 02. Rel can be less than or greater than, that's basically referring to subclass relationship. Note that this is present in all ontology languages. In all you have subclass relationships. In CARTL you have subsorts. Also in UML you have such things, but say in plain first order logic or common logic or propositional logic, you don't have a subclass relation. So this wouldn't make any sense here. So that means that these symbols have to be interpreted in a logic-specific way, and you have to show that a specific logic actually can usefully interpret these symbols. Otherwise, you have to leave them out. The equal sign can be interpreted in any logic because it just means that the semantics of the two symbols should be rather the same in both ontologies. Then there's the percent sign, which means that the concepts that are related are disjoint. And then there is elementhood and reverse elementhood. There is mapping, which is the same as equality. Or it could be just in map arrow, which is the same as equality. Finally, conf is an optional confidence value between 0 and 1, and expressing your confidence in the alignment, whether this is really appropriate. Okay, and then one example at the end, we have an alignment between a very brief ontology consisting only of class woman to one consisting of class person only. And then you have the correspondence is woman is less than person, which really means that you not align directly woman with person, which would be the equality and the create both classes, but you say that woman is only a subclass. Fabian asks, why do we need the arrow if it's the same as equality? Yeah, basically that has the reason that in Jerome Usenaar's book, it's done that way, I think at least. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe it's also in the alignment API. Just having a quick look here. Ontology matching, where is it? Yeah. So I think the answer is these are two different ways of expressing the same thing. We have this sometime. It's kind of contradicts Occam's razor, but can ease the access to the language for people, from different people having different experiences. No, in the book there's only equality, I think. This maps to is basically taken from the interpretation syntax. Maybe you want to keep it also for alignment. Okay. So what is the difference to ID? What do you mean by this, Fabian? Fabian? On slide 37,
The same line. There's, I understood the larger and smaller than and equals and the percentage sign and in, element and the element of in both directions. But I didn't see, I mean, it seems now that the arrow is redundant, really. And so the question is, what is the last, the ID?
Ah, okay, this ID, not the ID.
Yeah.
Oliver? Okay, so this ID is just an identifier, or typically a URL, where you can have a user-defined relation. Does this answer your question? Ah, thank you. Okay, slide 38. Here is another example that we have already presented several times, but now written up in DOL. So you have two ontologies, or say fragments of ontologies. Onto one, they class person, woman, subclass of person and bank. Onto two, you have human being, woman, subclass of human being and bank again. And then we have an alignment from onto one to onto two. Are equating person in onto one with human being into onto two and the two woman concepts. Know that the two bank concepts are not equated. And therefore, in the resulting alignment, you get, But there's no resulting alignment. That's the alignment here. Yeah. Okay. So slide 39. That's now combinations. And that's a quite novel feature of DOL. And you can use it to combine ontologies into larger ones. You list a lot of ontologies and also a lot of links. These links can be interpretations or alignments between OSMs. And you can also prefix the individual ontologies or OSMs with labels. And then the semantics is given by a colimit of the diagram consisting of the OSMs and the links. Okay, here are two examples. The first one is just saying combine alignment one. That was this woman subclass of person example. And if you go to slide 40, that's the corresponding diagram that we get. And then the colimit is just the same. Woman is a subclass of person. That's not so interesting. So if you go back to slide 39, then you see this second combine where you say we combine onto one and onto two along a kind of V alignment. And this V alignment was given on slide 38, basically persons mapped to human being and woman to woman. And then we get an aligned ontology, and we can rename the two different versions of bank and also other stuff like human being to person. So that's the syntax of a combination. It's a very powerful operation. It basically glues together OSMs and identifies parts of these OSMs with parts of possibly different OSMs. So the kind of copying or pasting together and quotienting that's going on there. Yeah, slide 40 is the diagram for the first alignment. And slide 41 is its colimit, but its colimit is the same as one of the ontologies, so it's not so interesting. Sorry. And slide 42 has an alignment for a diagram for the second alignment with woman, person, human being, and the bank. And then the core limit will actually identify person with human being, but the two different banks will be kept distinct because they have not been created in the alignment. And therefore, one must implicitly assume that they are meant to be different concepts. And here you cleanly separate these two different concepts. Slide 44. That's basically how to construct out of some ontologies and their links and a paragraph that can be used to compute the co-limit. Diagrams, just a set of nodes and which in this case are ontologies and some links between the nodes, which are interpretations, basically. Okay. Slide 45, OSM bridges. This has been motivated by work on distributed description logic. They are sometimes equipped with bridges, and we wanted to have these bridges in as well, although bridges are just kind of an abbreviation. So the syntax is O1 bridge with translation TO2, and T must be a logic translation. The semantic is the same as O1 with translation T, so first O1 is translated along long translation T, and then O2 is added. And that means that they could live in quite different logics. And this with translation T will also translate OWL to some distributed description logic or into e-connections, which are somehow related and similar. And O2, so this basically you have O1, you translate it to some other ontology, and then some other ontology language, sorry. And then in this language you can express other things, possibly using a more powerful language, and these can constrain then O2 and also the relations that have been introduced by T. Okay. So after all this theory, let's have a look at some example that's directly taken from Luciano Serafini's work, who actually he's in Bolzano, and about a year ago, I think, at this place he presented his distributed description logics, which inspired us to make some extensions of the DALL language. So slide 46 has a more extended description of what's going on there in the example. So you have two different fabrication ontologies, say, which are similar and related but not equal. In particular, the in-book class is split into publication and there's book article, which is not in the first ontology, so they're a bit different. And on slide 47 you see how to use the bridge. First, you combine the two ontologies and thereby translate them to many-sorted OWL. This is needed because the bridge and also the semantics of Luciano Serafini assume that there are many different universes. So if you have a many sorted version of OWL, then there's no problem. Note that we also use the combine in connection with this one colon and two colon in front of the ontology. And this now has, if we then bridge this with the translation of many sorted OWL to distributed description logics, where we have a certain notation for writing down some complex relations between different ontologies, then we can say, for example, publication in the first ontology is subclass of publication in the second one, or in book in the first is a subclass of book article in the second one. So that means we can kind of adopt different terminologies and try to make them more uniform. Slide 48. It's also possible to write down qualifications of language, logic, or serialization. And such a declaration only affects the subsequent declarations and relations, and not the previous ones. Okay, then slide 49. That's already the conclusion. Slide 50. So there are some challenges. One challenge is non-monotonic logics and rule languages like RIF and RULML, because we have chosen an institution semantics for DOL, but this is unclear whether this will work for non-monotonic logics. Then we have, especially in OWL, we have query languages and answer substitutions. Question is, what is the correct abstraction that we can do this in a kind of logic-independent way? Then there is the question whether we should distinguish T-boxes and A-boxes like in OWL, where the T-boxes are more the theories behind, and the A boxes are the ontologies behind, and the A boxes is the real instance data. And can we do this also in the same way for other logics except from OWL? Then in OWL we also have notion of class hierarchy and satisfiability of a class. That's not there in other logics, but maybe there's something that's similar. And for example, in Castle, we have subsort hierarchies, or in UML, you have subclasses in the class diagram. Another point is how to interpret alignment correspondences with confidence other than one in a combination. So we have confidence one, then we stay in the realm of logic and we can do everything. But if we are given an alignment where you have confidence value, say 0.5, and then you need to take into account that the whole alignment consists of maybe dozens of such things, then the question is whether this alignment does tell you anything. Or yeah. It's good that one can express this. But I'm not sure whether this will actually be used so much. We probably should ask Jérôme Usena and the semantics so far just assumes that we have confidence one, and if we don't, then yeah, can only give a kind of surface semantics. Yeah. Then there's the question whether logical frameworks can or should be used for the specification of OSM languages and translations. And then there's proof support. Proof support has been also implemented in HETS and OntoHub already for DOL, but only partially. So We cannot expect a complete calculus, but we can probably come as nearly as complete as possible. Okay. Then slide 51, tool support. The heterogeneous tool set heads actually speaks TOL and also some other logical and ontology languages that can analyze your OSMs, compute co-limits, manage proof obligations, and has interfaces to various theorem provers, model checkers, and model finders. So that's one tool that speaks actually TOL. The other tool that speaks TOL is on slide 52. That's on the OntoHub web portal and repository. It's available at ontohub.org and speaks TOL and OWL and CommonLogic and other languages. And the midterm goal is to follow the Open Ontology Repository Initiative, OR, and its architecture and API. But that's not entirely clear what we will do there. In the OR architecture, but for sure is that we now have already some ontology repository which speaks TOL, and if you want to have combinations, you can write TOL files for this. We will also in the future add some fancy graphical facilities in order to specify alignments and interpretations and so on, and then press on a button and get the combination. Yeah, and the annual ontology summit is a venue for review and discussion. Actually, it's just ongoing now, this ontology summit. So slide 53 just summarizes and again explains what OSMs are. Yeah, thank you for your attention. So the question is now, are there any comments also on the previous slides, so on the whole set of slides? Is this a good design of DOL? Should we change something? Should we add something, remove something? What do you think?
Well, I think it captures all the functionality that we want to be able to have, all the different relationships that we want to specify, and all the different use cases that we've identified. I guess the only one of the questions will be kind of the usability, which is more of a syntax issue. But I suppose whatever we pick, if it's driven by enough examples like you have in here, and you can easily provide many more, then that should help that. But that would be one of the things I'd be wondering about would be the usability of the syntax. I know I've kind of mentioned it to a few people, and they find the syntax, I guess, which is inspired by the HET syntax, not immediately intuitive. I know, Conrad, he's on right now. Conrad, you made some comments, I think, the last meeting, the use of the word if and then, kind of causing a bit of confusion the first time you see it.
Yeah, you might consider, you have an abstract syntax, so you're not completely dependent on concrete syntax, but it's, the uptake of the language is so dependent on the concrete syntax that even though it's kind of dreary when you already understand the abstract syntax, for the users, and if you really want uptake, you probably have to have a separate, review and seeking input on whether the words are, reflect the common usage. which actually, words and common usage actually are quite different from the way technical people use them. Like here at NIST, we say standards, and most people in the outside world think that that means just something you have to live up to. But we don't mean it that way. So even an organization as big as NIST with a word in its title that actually gives a misimpression of what it does. So that kind of stuff can really get in the way of the uptake of a language, even though when you already understand it, of course, it doesn't matter that much. So I'd say it's worth having, you know, a separate go-through, separate sort of activity for choosing words, choosing the leaf terms.
Yeah, maybe this should be done after we have kind of fixed the language, so the what constructs are in there, and then we could, if we have the whole language, then we can fix the syntactic detail.
I find, I think you mentioned that between the 2 hours before, I find that some of the syntax is just choosing, probably for convenience when you are used to the language, it makes it easier, but if you learn the language, it's hard, it makes it harder. And one example is O1, then O2. There, the then is basically an and. You know, it's not the same as and, but, you know, more or less the same thing. And if you compare it to O1, then sequence O2, suddenly it's not a version of the sequence, doesn't really say, doesn't certainly put it in a different class of things, because now it's a proof obligation. See what I mean? The first is a more or less a way of creating a new ontology based on two other ontologies. And the second is expressing a proof obligation at the same time. So it's really in the second category, not in the category of multiple ontology routines with M's, but in the more in the category of relations between ontologies. And
that's true,
while I see that it's convenient when you are not familiar with the language, separating that out and just say and just have a predicate which says separating these two things out, I think will make it easier to learn.
Yeah, I think we could additionally have a construct saying that O1 is a conservative extension of O2 or something like that.
Right.
That's basically it's kind of the module relation. So we already have that. But I would not delete the possibility to annotate then, because this then percent cons is basically the same as then itself. It also defines a new OSM, O1 then O2, but additionally introduces some relation or some proof obligation. And
yes,
very
that's just what the point I'm trying to make. It's a matter of convenience. I mean, this is equivalent to saying O1 then O2 is a conservative extension of O1, right?
But that's more clumsy. You, for beginners, it might be the better way, but for experts, it's too clumsy. So we should have
right. So my suggestion is, when you present stuff like this, you probably want to present the clean way first, and then say, oh, and by the way, there are shortcuts. You know, make that an appendix, or put it somewhere else.
You can have multiple concrete syntaxes, either just by adding shortcuts, or you can have entirely different ones. You know, the way Al does. Al has many concrete syntaxes.
Because
no matter what concrete syntax you pick, some audience will not like it.
Well, and the other thing too to kind of see is that in many cases we're specifying these meta-threadic relations on OSMs effectively, and so we can maybe treat it in that way. You know, many of them are binary relations, and so you can almost write them as triples. And with, you know, so you know, 01 conservative extension of 02. You know, so there's, that's kind of a natural way to write it is a triple, but that's with a binary meta-threaded relation. But if there are, you know, other entry ones, perhaps the way we, ontology, alignments are specified, there's just more arguments. But if we can look at it that way and had, I guess maybe analogous to, Conrad's comment, you know, there's the new functional syntax for OWL. You know, imagine this functional syntax for Dole where the meta-threaded relation is this relation, and then the arguments to that are the different OSMs that are related in that way. So it's more kind of, yeah, I guess just stating that relationship, you know, kind of simply declaratively without having this additional notion of, say, proof obligation, which is more coming from the perspective of the one, some of the tools that we'd be using this. Just a thought.
Okay, I have captured this in this chat.
Right.
So yeah, I think we could have a discussion about this at a later stage. So we should first specify the abstract syntax and also agree on what the meaning is, the semantics is. I have also some slides with semantics for all the constructs. And then once we have fixed this abstract syntax, then we could design several concrete syntaxes. Because if it's not fixed yet, then it's kind of a moving target and it's difficult to speak about the clean design of overall concrete syntaxes. Okay, Terry asks for simple tutorials for the experienced OWL, CL, or UML, or other practitioners. Which is, of course, also a good thing to have, but I'm not sure whether this is the next priority. So my priority would first be to have the document updated, where so currently this design is fixed on the slides, and there is a document which was the working draft of ISO, and we should update this with this current design, and also then look whether it meets the RFP requirements, because it may be that some of the requirements are not met and we have to change all of it. Okay. So Christoph also has to leave, so maybe we should stop the session soon. And the question would be what comes next? Should we have a look at the semantics? Would you be interested in this? Or should we continue with this writing of the document and have tasks there and so on.
So what about the general feature set, and at what time do we have to close the basic syntactic constructs that we want to have in, like DOL 1.0 set? So, I mean, we were discussing notions of equivalence. This is maybe something we should look at before we close this chapter. And also the bridge constructs in the present form. I'm not entirely sure this is like the final way of how we want to treat it. So we might need a little bit more time to be sure. Yeah. So we should maybe make a meta plan, give us a deadline to close the DOL 1.0, what should go in it, and then we can fix the semantics and look at concrete syntax.
Yeah, What about mid-April or so? That's a deadline for that.
Mm.
And first, I would like to match the current design with the RFP. Maybe that's the next step that we should do. Then we take this design as it is in the slide and read the RFP again and then see what still needs to be put in there or needs to be discussed and so on.
Yeah, I agree with Oliver. Kind of having a another kind of pass through to see whether we have all the necessary constructs and relationships. And it's almost like, yeah, there's these three parallel things we could be doing. You know, so with the existing relationships that we all sort of agree should be there, making sure that everyone agrees on the semantics. In parallel, making sure we have all the different constructs and relationships we need, and then as all that's going along, making sure that this is how this fits into the document. Those could be concurrent tasks, possibly.
Sorry, what did you say about tasks?
Well, I agree with Oliver. We want to spend a bit more time to make sure that we have the complete set of relationships that we want to include, or that we have some confidence in that. But of the ones that are here, we seem to kind of agree that they should be in there. And so if somebody wants to work on this, making sure that the semantics of those relationships is clear. And then in both cases, what we want to do is to ensure that it maps into a particular part of the document so that it kind of maintains the coherence, overall coherence of the document.
Yeah, concerning the semantics, as I said, I have slides with the semantics. So
okay, so then, yeah, so maybe it's already there then. But I think that the two things then would be to have do another pass through, like Oliver said, to make sure we have all the relationships we need.
Well, I think the things that we mentioned, equivalents, distributed languages that are already known. And I was already also discussing with Fabian to pitch it to the patterns community in some sense, because we have a lot to offer for the reuse of patterns, but it's not obvious from the language at all. So this could be more aggressively, clearly put into the language somehow. I think just to cover what's already used in the ontology community seems important.
Mm-hmm.
And to cover it well enough. So if we have EDL there and E connections, it should really cover it properly and not in an obscure way and very difficult syntax. So then we better leave it out. I mean, we should give it a bit more energy probably and at this point.
Yeah, the relationship with the pattern should be interesting, although it sort of assumes that they agree what a pattern is. It's always been one of the bit of frustrations with that what a pattern is a little slippery. But you're right.
Because nobody knows what a pattern is, we can give definition 1.0 for what a pattern is.
Well, there's a lot of literature about ontology design patterns, but there's no formal definition yet.
That's right.
Well, in some sense, it's just a micro theory that's decoupled from the notion of conservativeness and so on. It's not a proper module in relation to something else. It's just some small, some structure that you can reinterpret somewhere else. But, what you need is renaming of symbols, and maybe if you want to use the pattern in some other logic, you need to translate it. So we've got everything to, take a little mini theory and reuse it in many ways. So we have a perfect towel, as me and Fabian call it, the pattern name, pattern on frigid language.
So So that means that we have already everything there for the pattern language, but we would probably want to have fancier syntax for patterns.
Well, I think the opportunity is that because everyone uses the word pattern, it's such a common word that everyone says, oh, yeah, I can see what a pattern would be. But people don't actually, especially the ontology design pattern community, they don't really formally articulate that. And so there's this kind of situation where people are actually thinking about different things, but because they're all using the same word, they all feel they're talking about the same thing. And so by pinning down exactly what a pattern is using DOLE would be, you're right, that would be an interesting idea.
Well, the observation which we started on in my discussion was that they always talk about the reuse of patterns, right? The idea. And that you can solve how magically combine patterns to a large ontology, and that could, you know, lead to more productivity and all of that. And of course, for that, it's not sufficient to just dump them in one file, but you do definitely have to use, you know, you have to link the different, merge the different ontologies together.
Right.
Do them together properly, basically, in order to make that even work. And that's for that they need the language like DOLE.
Right.
And that was basically everything is there already in the language. It's just a matter of marketing and creating a syntax which is simple enough that people can adopt it. It's I think as primitive as that. It's really not, it doesn't involve any additional work on the logic side. It's just on the language design and marketing side.
Right. And so actually Megan Katsumi and I had a paper in last year's workshop on ontology patterns. That's 2012. And, you said that because there are these, theories in Colorite that are synonymous with other ontologies in other domains, it was that more abstract ontology that was serving as the pattern, that then got reused in these other domains, you know, varying from time through process through, some biomedical domains. And it was because, again, of this relationship of logical synonymy. So that would easily fit into what you guys are saying.
No, I think that's the biggest challenge because of the complexity of the underlying theory. We can't expect that the intended users will understand it. I mean, they're just not going to happen. Most people who use OWL don't understand the semantics of OWL. And compared to the semantics of DOLE, OWL is a piece of cake. So the only way of making it usable is to document it in a way or that it's very intuitive, and part of that is finding a syntax which is really, really intuitive.
Yeah, maybe this is also a matter of workflows. We have discussed today that in AutoHub, at some time point, we want to add an interface for these ontology combinations, freeing the user from writing them down in DOLE, but directly selecting them via the web interface. That you select some ontologies and with your mouse, you draw some alignments and relate some concepts, and then with one mouse click, you create a combination. And a similar thing could be done for patterns. So this could also be a nice way of presenting this. You have some workflow in AutoHub. Okay. Yeah, so then it seems that we are done. And yeah, basically I have set up, or I have recorded the agenda for next time. 1, 2, 3 there. Peter, did you say something?
Same time? The next meeting, same time?
Yeah, why not? Just look at my calendar.
2 weeks.
Yeah. Sounds good.
So February 26th, same time as today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, see you then.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good session.
See you.
Bye-bye.